This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Welcome to Area News. Important stories that impact your life do not always happen in the metro area. Keep up with the news happening all around you and in your neighborhood, no matter where you live. For the next 60 minutes, it's Area News, right here on your audio reading service.
Welcome. This is Area News, and I'm your reader, Doug, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading from a few publications from the area, some of which are kpcnews.com, The Post and Mail, The Herald Press, The Decatur Daily Democrat, The Monroeville News, and the Wayndale News. Beginning now with KPC, copyright 2025, kpcnews.com. Indiana achieves unprecedented growth in third grade literacy rates. Results from the 24-25 Indiana Reading Evaluation and Determination Assessment show an unprecedented increase in third grade literacy rates. With this nearly 5% point jump, Indiana's third grade literacy rates have now increased for four consecutive years, indicating that Indiana's strategic, intentional investments in early literacy are working. As we work to make Indiana a beacon of freedom and opportunity, helping every Hoosier to live out their American dream starts with the ability to read, said Governor Mike Braun. From 24 to 25, Indiana's literacy rate jumped by nearly 5 percentage points, surpassing the record set the previous year 8 times over. The number of Indiana students learning to read is growing at an unprecedented pace and is yet another example of how we are leading the nation in education. We will continue to raise the bar and set the model for what is possible when we prioritize educational outcomes and get back to the basics, focusing on the foundations that unlock a lifetime of learning and success. Statewide results reveal that 73,500 of Indiana's third grade students, or 87.3%, demonstrated proficient reading skills on the iRead assessment. This is an improvement of nearly 5 percentage points over the results for the 2023-2024 school year, which is by far the largest single increase since the launch of iRead in 2013. The previous record for the largest year-over-year increase was set in 2024 and was less than 1%. Indiana has made extraordinary progress from where we began a few years ago, when nearly 1 in 5 Indiana third graders could not read. Today, when literacy rates have increased by nearly 5 percentage points in this year alone, said Katie Jenner, Indiana's Secretary of Education, thanks to the hard work and collaboration of our educators, parents, and families, students, and local communities, we have turned the page with literacy rates now soaring at a historic pace. This is a time for celebration, and it's also a time to double down on our commitment to help even more students learn to read. The data is clear. What we are doing is working. So let's keep at it, ensuring a brighter future for Hoosier students. From 2013, when iRead began, to 2021, Indiana's literacy rates declined every year except one. The pandemic exacerbated this literacy crisis, and in response, Indiana has made historic investments aimed at helping more students learn to read. With a nearly 5 percentage point jump in 2025, Indiana's third grade literacy rates are now back to pre-pandemic levels. The state has also set a goal that by 27, 95% of third grade students will be reading proficiently. Other key takeaways from the data include, for the first time ever, literacy rates increased for all student populations. Literacy rates for Black students, students in special education, and students receiving free reduced price meals have increased for four consecutive years. Black students, 7.5 percentage point increase from 2024 to 2025, 14.1% increase from 21 to 25. Students in special education, 7.5 percentage point increase from 24 to 25. 12.2 percentage point increase from 21 to 25. Students receiving free reduced price meals, 6.6 point increase from 24 to 25, and a 10% point increase from 21 to 25. Literacy rates for Hispanic students and English learners increase in 2025, following decreases in 24. More than 450 Indiana elementary schools hit the 95% reading goal, an increase of an additional nearly 180 elementary schools in just 1 year. Beginning this year, all second grade students participated in the iRead assessment, a tactic that has already proven successful at providing educators and families an early indicator of whether a student is on track to read by the end of third grade. Of the second grade students who participated in iRead in 2025, 68% passed or are on track to pass by the end of third grade. Over 96% of second graders who achieved on track in 2024 passed the assessment in 2025, thus showing the value and accuracy of the on-track indicator. With the help of this early indicator, educators were also able to identify students needing interventions to master foundational reading skills, allowing more than 65% of second graders who were identified as at risk in 2024 to pass in 2025. Kendallville Limberlost Libraries Renovate for the Future by Cheryl Prentice at kpcmedia.com. The Kendallville Public Library and its Limberlost Branch Library in Rome City are asking patrons to pardon our mess while construction takes place for needed updates and maintenance at both buildings. Library Executive Director Mindy London said Monday that the Kendallville Public Library building is 20 years old and the Limberlost building is 30 years old. The project will update and maintain infrastructure such as plumbing and the sprinkler system, restrooms and fixtures, and replace cracked flooring, worn carpet, and new refresh paint schemes. It costs a lot to keep up these buildings, London said. MSKTD and Associates is the architect for the project. Schenkel Construction is the general contractor, and Workspace Solutions is the moving company. The work will be done in phases, with completion expected in April of 2026. The Kendallville phases: Children's Department renovation, Cortex renovation, Boardroom renovation, Adult Services, Restroom addition, and Maintenance Building addition are all estimated to be done July to November in 2025. Phase 2, Teen Area renovation and Public Restroom renovation. Phase 3, Circulation and Administration renovation. Phase 4, Adult Services renovation and Genealogy renovation. Phase 5, Adult Services renovation continued, Friends of the Library store renovation, and new gallery flooring. The Kendallville renovation will also include updated fixtures, carpeting, paint, replacing pipes in the sprinkler system, updating the lighting system to LED, updating the parking lot lights, resurfacing the parking lot, updated landscaping, adding a hitching post, and more. Limberlost phases, study rooms addition and circulation relocation. Phase 2, adult service remodel and small meeting room remodel. Phase 3, children's services remodel. And phase 4, large meeting room remodel. London said the Limberlost renovations will include an addition to the back of the building, updating the outside electronic marquee, residing the building, repairing the drive-up book drop, resurfacing the parking lots, mechanical updates, updating fixtures, and adding sound barriers to the large meeting room. London said the construction project also is an opportunity to change the spaces. A new maintenance building will be added to the Kendallville property to the north of the library building. We are planning for the future for expansion and finishing, London said. It also follows OSHA guidelines for storing chemicals outside of the main building. They are stored correctly now, but the improvement is way better to store them. London said all lighting in the library will be replaced by energy-efficient LED bulbs. Lighting in the children's department will be recessed into the ceiling instead of the hanging pendant lights now in place. The hallway will have an ocean theme and features to keep kids occupied so they don't bolt for the front door ahead of parents and caregivers. The community loves a fish tank, Lennon said. We hope to add another fish tank. The children's area has been moved to rooms A and B near the front entrance during the first phase of construction. In the teen area, the large desk will be removed to add two smaller rooms, one for group study and one as a sensory room. The library offers sensory hours each Wednesday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., with dimmer lighting and less sound for patrons with sensory needs. The circulation will get an updated desk, with a lower accessibility portion moving from the end of the desk to a more visible place near the center. A second administration office will be added for the library's assistant director. The computers for public use will be moved closer to the circulation area, the fax and copier, so patrons won't have to walk so far to use the machines. The front desk can help more and eliminate the distance, Lennon said, and simplify the use of the space. The Cortex, formerly a makerspace, will become the home of Library of Things collection, which includes such things as small kitchen appliances, musical instruments, yard games, and crafting supplies. Patrons can check out the items and try them before buying them or making an investment in a hobby. Sound barriers will be added to the adult department's three study rooms, most often used for test-taking, job interviews, or small group meetings. The current periodical room will move to the genealogy room, with the space becoming a small conference room. All the library's furniture will be replaced with more vinyl and less fabric surfaces. Lennon said the pandemic taught the staff the value of surfaces that can be easily wiped or cleaned. The current furniture is for sale in the basement. Patrons may browse that sale and the Friends of the Library book sale at the same time. Over to sports, the Loaded Barons girls are the top golf squad in the area by Mark Murdoch, kpcmedia.com. All the pieces are in place for another big girls' golf season at DeKalb. The Barons, who opened the season in a tournament hosted by Guerin Catholic Monday, have four of the five players back from a lineup that produced a third consecutive NE8 conference title and a second straight sectional championship a year ago. DeKalb was a runner-up and earned a team trip to the state finals for the first time in several years. During the season, the Barons went 14-3 in dual competition. Sophie Feaster was a lone senior to depart and leaves big shoes to fill. The Barons, however, return a strong junior trio in Paige Williams, Grace Feaster, and Jaden Tompkins. Sophomore Ellington Sparkman also returns after being a varsity starter a year ago. Sophomore Belle Miller filled in for some varsity matches last year and is back. Two other sophomores, Molly Sonnenberg and Savannah Wright, are also ready to contribute. We're excited for the season to start to defend our conference and sectional championships, six-year Baron coach James Fissler said. The girls had a great summer competing and are ready to start the new season. Here's a brief look at other area girls' golf teams. Angola Hornets, coach Brian Miller, fifth season. The Hornets lost a couple of key seniors last season to graduation in Brooke Shelburne and Taylor Shelburne. Key returners include senior Sarah Smith and Layla Haggerty, along with sophomores Rivers Brewer and Brianna Metcalf. New faces to look for include freshman Alexis Hardley, Alexis Wainwright, and Aubrey Kepler and Hannah Hunt. We look forward to this season, Miller said. We bring back a lot of varsity experience with Sarah, River, Brianna, and Layla. We are also looking forward to having some contributions from Breslin and Kiara this year. We have four freshmen with middle school golf experience and look forward to seeing how they impact the team this year. The Garrett Railroaders, coach Jason Bucks, first season, six overall. Bucks takes over the Railroader program after five seasons at East Noble. In his first season in Garrett, he's buoyed by the return of letter winners Sidney Schulzer, along with Abigail Whirling and Remington Weinbrenner, both juniors. Freshmen Emily Neiman and Audra Newman are expected to contribute right away, Buck said. Though the Garrett program is just in its fourth year, Buck said the Railroaders have what it takes to compete for an NECC title in 2025. We have a good mix of experience with the three girls returning and the addition of the two freshmen, Buck said. Over to the Lakeland Lakers, coach Cassidy Roush, ninth season. After having just one golfer last season in junior, Cabela Watkins, who was honorable mention all NECC, The Lakers will welcome a pair of newcomers in 2025 in freshman Isabel Ousley and Ashley Bolden. Roush expects much of Watkins in terms of leadership for the two new players. This is Cabela's senior year. I'm seeing lots of improvement on her golf game this summer, Roush said. I'm looking forward to seeing what the season holds for her. Cabela is taking on as a role as a model, for our two incoming freshmen. Both Isabel and Ashley are new to golf, Roush said. They have the love for golf and determination to grow and get more confident in golf. They will be fun to watch. The West Noble Chargers, Coach Wilson Gant, first season. Key returners for West Noble include senior Lacey Lehman, juniors Lillian Lindsay, Constance Hoover, and Angelina Vallier. Freshman Nevaeh Gant is a newcomer. I'm really looking forward to the upcoming season, Coach Gant said. We have a great group of girls who are dedicated, hardworking, and passionate about the game of golf. I'm excited to see how that translates on the course. Prairie Heights Panthers, Coach Allison Hall in her fifth season. Hall is happy with a mix of experience and incoming talent that she hopes will help the Panthers improve on a 2-3 finish from last year. Seniors Sophia Rollison and Lily Johnson should provide leadership, and classmate Jade Tuttle is back for her second year of varsity golf. Emily Lauer and Claire Greathouse will join the Panthers after having success at the middle school level. Fremont, East Noble, Cherubusco, and Central Noble did not turn in information on their teams. Fremont and the Knights will look to field competitive teams again with much of their rosters returning. Busco and the Cougars have a good numbers in recent years, with many of their girls just picking up golf over the last couple of years. Moving now to the Post and Mail, copyright 2025, KPC Media. Stutzman hosts job fair at Purdue-Fort Wayne. Several regional companies participate, by Lisa Esquivel Long. U.S. Representative Martin Stutzman, Republican 3rd in conjunction with Purdue University Fort Wayne and Northeast Indiana Works, hosted a job fair July 31st in the university's International Ballroom at Walbs Student Union. More than 60 employers with a total of more than 1,600 job openings were expected to attend. The employers from around Northeast Indiana came from a variety of industries, including manufacturing, healthcare, government, finance, law enforcement, and transportation. This is just a great community event, Stutzman said. It allows for employers to set up and meet those who are seeking new job opportunities or career changes. Stutzman, who represented the 3rd District from 2010 to 2017 previously, hosted the event, which was then continued by his successor, Jim Banks. The 3rd District is one of the largest agricultural districts and also has services for veterans. The job fair provides an opportunity for job candidates to ask questions that they might not be able to do online. Also, I think when you're at a job fair like this, it kind of puts you on the forefront of that list of potential candidates because the company can say, we met them there. Stutzman hears that, for instance, physicians looking to work in Northeast Indiana, they're looking not only for a good job, they want to see a place that's friendly to families. Of course, taking them out to the Parkview Field is a good event to take a prospect. And of course, our great restaurants we have here in Fort Wayne and surrounding areas, and the zoo. So people are just looking at that full spectrum of what we have here in Northeast Indiana. And of course, our cost of living is one of the best in the country. And I also think people are just super nice. Several of the employers don't require any form of advanced training, such as a college degree or special certificate. New Millennium Building Systems in Butler is a fabrications division of Steel Dynamics that uses metal from the mills to make steel joists and decks. Many of its openings can be filled by just off-the-street candidates, Kurt Voigt, the engineering manager, said. On the engineering side, candidates need a minimum of a bachelor's degree. We have lots of different openings, from office positions, administration positions, to floor positions in our mills and fabrication shops, Voigt said. So we have a lot of openings and availability. It has also had an internship program for high school and college students. That's really been a great resource for us to find employees. The company has recycling facilities, steel fabrication shops, and steel mills across the country, he said. We're just looking for that can-do attitude, somebody to come in and want to work. We can teach the skill, Janelle Childers, Director of Human Resources at Excel in the Villa, said. It's hiring for 8-hour shifts Monday to Friday. The company has non-mandatory Saturday overtime, but what interests a lot of attendees is the company's $24 an hour starting pay, Childress said. The company draws down metal rods to 14-gauge plate it with nickel or tin, and then bunch it for use in the aerospace, telecommunications, medical, and automotive industries. No place like Dome. Trying adding new facility to serve athletic programs. From staff reports, Trine University athletic teams will soon have another all-weather option. The university will open a 6,092,000 square foot inflatable dome next spring, providing training, practice, and competition spaces for sports including baseball, softball, lacrosse, soccer, and football. The new facility will feature artificial turf, new locker rooms, and a controlled climate that will allow for year-round use. It will accommodate bleachers for spectators as needed. We're proud to continue to support our athletic teams with state-of-the-art facilities, allowing them to build on the many successes we've already achieved, said Earl Brooks, the second Trine University president. In addition, this new space will allow our students more access to Hershey Hall, which will undergo its own extensive renovation and upgrades. Thunder athletic teams have captured three NCAA Division III team championships in the last 2 years, with softball winning in 2023 and 25, and men's basketball taking the title in 2024. Soil borings are being conducted for the project, which will be located south of the Keith E. Bussey Steel Dynamics Athletic and Recreation Center. Construction will begin as soon as the proper permits are issued. Michael Kinder and Sons will serve as construction manager. The new dome will provide practice space for teams that will be temporarily displaced by the renovation of Hershey Hall, which was announced last spring as part of the university's master plan. In addition to the Hershey Hall renovations, the plan, which encompasses about $120 million in capital projects, includes the new Summit Street Apartments, the John and Mary Pellegrino Student Design Center, renovations to Zollner Football Stadium, and new facilities to support parking, dining, campus operations, and the Frank School of Education. Moving now to the Monroeville News. Copyright 2025, the Monroeville News. 6 days of Morgan's raid through Indiana by Lola Turnett, the Monroeville News. Some say that John Morgan's Civil War raid of 1863 was a failure. But for local historian Sam Thorne, he feels Morgan did his job of diverting the Union troops away from General Bragg's location to allow him to escape. Thorne, a Huntington native, is a former Carroll Middle School teacher and PFW professor. He also has a love of Civil War history that led him sharing his research with members of Four Presidents Corners Historical Society at their August 6th meeting in Monroeville. As a veteran of the U.S. Navy, he served as a telegrapher, spending time high up in the mountains of Ethiopia. His role as a telegrapher gives him personal insight on the communication skills used by the Confederate Army in disrupting the attention of Union General Burnside and his troops. Thorne shared unique stories of the raid, with remarks how George Lightning Ellsworth, a Canadian telegrapher who served in the cavalry of Brigadier General John Morgan in the Confederate Army during the Civil War, he would climb up telegraph poles to spread disinformation to the Union troops. But a talented young Union telegrapher recognized the hand of Ellsworth as a hoax and spread the word, helping the North in their efforts. As Thorne began, he set the stage for what the country looked like in the 1860s as he laid out the history of the division of the country between the free states and the slave states. He talked about the hazards of living in the border states and the threat of Copperhead sympathizers. The speed of the raid was everything, explained Thorne. It was take what you can and live off the land, he added. They stole food, equipment, and horses along the way. General Morgan was touted as the thunderbolt of the Confederacy and the great horse thief, a sort of swashbuckler that earned his reputation as one of the most colorful dramas of the Civil War. Thorne passed out maps of Morgan's route through Indiana so his audience could follow the trail through Indiana. He told how battles in the North were named after rivers and the battles in the South were named after states. He talked how Brigadier General Morgan and his group of cavalrymen began their 1,100-mile raid. small groups of Morgan scouts and raiding parties rode through some southern Indiana counties. The main soldiers of Morgan's force followed a route through eight counties, passing through such towns as Corydon, Salem, Lexington, Vernon, Versailles, leaving the states towards Harrison, Ohio. John Hunt, Morgan's 1863 cavalry raid, was the largest military campaign conducted in Indiana during the Civil War. Thorne told stories of when Morgan's men burned a storehouse, stealing hams in DuPont. As they discarded them along the side of the road, it left the trail for Indiana militia troops to follow as they chased Morgan and his men out of the state. The timeline looks like this. July 8, 1863, John Hunt Morgan and 2,000 cavalrymen crossed the Ohio River into Indiana on two captured steamboats. On July 9th, the Battle of Corydon took place as Morgan's men outflanked 450 men of the Home Guards. The next day on July 10th, the raiders entered Salem, where they looted the businesses and burned the railroad depot. A Union cavalry force of 4,000, led by General Hobson, was in pursuit. At Indianapolis, Governor Oliver P. Morton asked General Lew Wallace to command 13 regiments of Minutemen. The raiders passed through Vienne, advancing into Lexington, Indiana. On July 11, 1863, at Vernon, the raiders were turned back. This is the first and only time that they were forced to fall back while in Indiana. His tactics had been studied by many leaders, noted Thorne, as he concluded his talk at the Four Presidents' Corners Historical Society meeting. I think he did his job. John Hunt Morgan was just 39 when he was killed, September 4, 1864, in Greenville, Tennessee. Monroeville Fire Department at 205 West South Street will host the Indiana Native American Artifact Show on Saturday, August 16th. Doors open at 7 a.m. with show at 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Admission is free. For table reservation, contact Jared Luganbill at 260-609-3832 or Steve Ward at 260-573-6555. Lunch will be available on site. The show is sponsored by the Indiana Archaeological Society. There's a football fundraiser. Heritage Football Program is currently running a fundraiser to help raise money and to ensure they have a successful season. The donations will be used to ensure we provide our athletes with everything they need to be successful and ensure we continue to run a first-class championship program, said head coach Jeremy Hullinger. Unfortunately, our team struggles to raise the funds necessary to offset the growing costs, and we are looking to our families, friends, and community for help, he added. Donate whatever you can. Even the smallest donation makes a difference. Each participant has an individual goal of raising $500 for the fundraiser, so please donate so that they may accomplish it. Levels of boosters include $25, $50, $100, and $200, etc. If you'd like to help, you can send a check payable to Heritage Junior Senior High School, Attention Coach Hollinger. Check can be mailed to 13608 Monroeville Road, Monroeville, Indiana, 46773. Put football on the memo line. The Heritage football team will travel to Fort Wayne on Friday, August 15th for a 7 p.m. scrimmage with Bishop Lures. Their first game of the season will be Friday, August 22nd at Belmont at 7 p.m. Best to keep your attention in all directions when walking on the road by Dr. Glenn Mollett. Walking on the road is generally allowed if there are no sidewalks available. However, some specific roads like highways or interstates usually prohibit pedestrian traffic. Walking on roads for exercise can be safe if you walk facing traffic. Stay as far to the left as possible. Wear bright or reflective clothing. Be constantly aware of your surroundings. Choose roads with lower speed limits. You do not always have the right-of-way. You do in the following situations: crosswalks, marked or unmarked, intersections with pedestrian signals, sidewalks and paths already yielding to pedestrians. Pedestrians must yield on roads without sidewalks where you should walk facing traffic. When traffic signals or police give direction. When entering a roadway from your home or any property. When visiting Florida in the winter, one or two people are killed every year in a crosswalk. They had the right-of-way, but they still were killed. It doesn't matter if you're following the law when you end up dead and no longer able to walk. We've had some nice weather recently in our area. This morning, as I drove to the store, people were out walking on our small two-lane road. They were jogging on the road, and some were walking on the road. One couple was in a very shady spot, taking for granted that a traffic would see them. I've had a couple of friends hit in the recent years. One was out walking and one was badly mangled but did live with several surgeries and therapy. Another friend was hit and killed. You can't take for granted that drivers are paying attention. So many drivers today are talking on their cell phones, texting, jiving to music, or looking at everything other than the road. You can't depend on drivers to assure you of your safety. We should all drive acutely aware of the road and our surroundings, but drivers make mistakes. A jogger doesn't want to be in the path of someone who is distracted. Today, I see kids in our neighborhood riding on mopeds with earplugs and listening to music. They are laughing and having a great time. Then there are the golf carts with kids hanging onto the back of them, or ATV vehicles that are illegal on most public roads. An ATV going down the road at dusk with no headlights is a scary sight. Are they able to see you if you are on the road walking? Probably not. The best we can do is our best. If you are going to walk on the road, keep your attention in all directions. Try to move a couple of feet off the road until cars pass. Give them plenty of room. This is not the place to stand your ground. Don't listen to music. You need to hear whatever is coming. We all need exercise, but not at the risk of death. I'm grateful that I can still walk and jog some. I constantly try to stay aware. As drivers, our job is to slow down and drive as cautiously as possible. Dr. Glenn Mallett is the author of Uncommon Sense and 13 other books. He has published in all 50 states, including Monroeville, Indiana, at glennmallett.com. Moving now to The Plain Dealer. Copyright 2025, The Plain Dealer. Prosecutor says police shooting justifiable, by David Freese Nelson. Wabash County Prosecutor's Office announced last week the early July fatal shooting of a Silver Lake man by law enforcement was justifiable. Dale White, 65, succumbed to a gunshot wound after a confrontation with law enforcement officers serving a warrant in July. No criminal charges will be filed against any law enforcement officers regarding the matter. The Indiana State Police Investigative Team and Wabash County Prosecutor's Office believe officers with the Wabash County Emergency Response Team were justified in using deadly force as necessary to prevent a perceived threat of serious bodily injury to themselves or other officers in the immediate area, police said. After a thorough examination of the ISP reports, statements of witnesses, interviews conducted of the officer directly involved in the shooting, the autopsy report, video footage, and ISP crime lab report, the totality of the evidence established this incident as a legally justifiable shooting by law enforcement, said Wabash County Prosecutor William Hartley in an issued statement. The Wabash County Prosecutor's Office referred to the Indiana Code 35-41-3-2C in its rendering. A person is justified in using deadly force and does not have a duty to retreat if the person reasonably believes that the force is necessary to prevent serious bodily injury to the person or a third person or the commission of a forcible felony. No person in the state shall be placed in legal jeopardy of any kind whatsoever for protecting the person or a third person by reasonable means necessary. On the morning of July 10th, the Wabash County Sheriff's Office, Wabash City Police Department, Wabash County Emergency Response Team, and Kosciuszko County SWAT arrived to serve several warrants at a residence at 244 Crappie Road near Indiana 114 in Wabash County, approximately 8 miles from the town of Silver Lake in Kosciuszko County. Upon entrance into the home and presenting warrants, law enforcement officers observed White brandishing an undisclosed type of firearm while pointing toward the direction of the officers, according to Indiana State Police Public Information Officer Sergeant Steve Glass. In response, one law enforcement officer discharged their weapon once, hitting White, according to Glass. Despite life-saving measures performed on White, he succumbed to the injury and was pronounced dead on the scene by Wabash County Coroner Ken Brown. First West Nile case of 2025 in Miami County. The Indiana Department of Health has notified the Miami County Health Department that mosquito samples collected in Miami County have tested positive for West Nile virus. The department recommends taking precautions against mosquito bites to reduce the risk of diseases caused by mosquito-borne viruses, which in addition to WNV include Eastern Equine Encephalitis, or Triple E virus, and Lacrosse virus. State and local health officials recommend that all Hoosiers take the following steps to prevent mosquito-borne diseases. Use insect repellent. Apply EPA-registered insect repellents containing DEET, picaridin, IR3535 oil, oil of lemon eucalyptus, paramethanediol, or 2-undecone, according to the label directions. Wear protective clothing. Wear loose-fitting long-sleeve shirts and pants. Consider treating clothing and gear with a permethrin product. Note, permethrin products should not be applied directly to the skin. Know when to expect mosquito bites. The Culex species of mosquitoes is mostly responsible for West Nile virus and is active mostly between dusk and 1 a.m. and at dawn. Taking precautions to avoid bites between dusk and dawn is recommended. Furthermore, homeowners, landlords, and property managers should take the following steps to control mosquitoes indoors and outdoors. Install screens on windows and doors and keep them in good repair. Look for containers that could hold water, such as trash, tires, buckets, toys, pools, bird baths, flower pots, saucers, or trash containers. Prevent mosquitoes from accessing containers. This can be done by removing trash, removing items indoors, covering or overturning items not in use, drilling holes in the bottom of trash containers, installing screens on rain barrels, replacing water in pet bowls daily, and flushing bird baths, fountains and other containers at least once a week. Maintain properties and landscaping in good condition. This includes regular servicing septic systems, keeping grass mowed and shrubs trimmed, cleaning gutters regularly and aerating ornamental pools or stocking them with predatory fish. Most people infected with West Nile virus have no symptoms or only mild flu-like symptoms, which can include fever, headache, body aches, joint pain, vomiting, diarrhea, or a rash. Some people infected with West Nile virus will develop a more severe form of the disease, affecting the nervous system, including inflammation in the brain and spinal cord, muscle paralysis, or even death. People older than 60 years old and those with weakened immune systems are at higher risk of severe West Nile virus disease. People who think they may have West Nile virus should see their healthcare providers immediately. Bluegrass event brings hundreds to Iconic Barn by David Freeze Nelson. Despite midsummer rain showers last Saturday evening, a cloud of despair wasn't cast upon the rustic barn at Hopewell. The show must go on, and it did. The annual Bluegrass at Hopewell didn't miss a beat, and music filled the iconic Wabash County venue. Unable to use an outdoor stage, event organizers move acts inside the barn to keep everyone dry as showers were intermittent throughout the evening. With the barn having two floors, musicians scheduled the play for those with lawn seating got to perform in a club-like atmosphere on the lower level. When the weather turned, we had to make a quick decision to pivot, but keeping the music alive and everyone dry was a priority, said Jennifer Long-Dillon, tourism manager at Visit Wabash County. Moving everything into the barn allowed the bands to keep playing, and people still got to enjoy the heart of bluegrass at Hopewell, despite the storm. It was a reminder that sometimes a little flexibility makes the magic happen. For the county's Tourism Bureau, it was one of the biggest events they produce each year. Much went into the planning and was greatly appreciated by the several hundred in attendance. Bluegrass at the Hopewell is a beautiful and unique event that brings the community together, the Visit Wabash County team said, and volunteers considered every detail, from the flowers to the entertainment, while planning this fun and memorable festival, said Paige Martin, North Manchester resident. Priding itself on musicianship, the event featured authentic bluegrass music, a genre of music characterized by tight harmonies, high-pitched vocals, often referred to as high lonesome sound, and the use of acoustic string instruments like banjo, fiddle, mandolin, and guitar, with a rhythm usually driven by upright bass. Musicians performing included Rock Bottom Boys of Madison County, Cornfields and Crossroads, Dwayne, Hank Conaway, The Barrel Scrapers, The Robin Davis Duo, and Watershed Ramblers. Trolley number 85 stayed on schedule, delivering attendees to the Antique Boutique at Hopewell, where live music was waiting for them, as well as refreshments. Visit Wabash County is dedicated to enhancing the local economy by attracting visitors, new residents, and businesses to Wabash County. Through engaging programming, community partnerships, and strategic marketing initiatives, Visit Wabash County continues to promote the county as a premier destination for living, recreation, and business, added Visit Wabash County Executive Director Christine Floor. Now moving to the Wayne Dale News. Copyright 2025, the Wayne Dale News. Read to the Animals Night promotes literacy and kindness. On Monday, August 18th, 2025, animal lovers ages 5 and up can participate in the Fort Wayne Animal Care and Control's Humane Education Program called Read to the Animals. At no charge, thanks to our friends at Fido's Forest, registration is required. Read to the Animals provides participants an opportunity to spend 30 minutes in their own room while reading with an adoptable shelter animal, most often small animals, cats or kittens. This program is a win-win for all, since it has been proven that the presence of animals reduces stress, and participants help to socialize our adoptable animal shelter animals while they wait to be adopted. Read to the Animals is offered year-round, but typically has a $5 donation fee associated with registration. Reading registration is on a first-come, first-served basis, and reading begins as early as 4 p.m., and the final reading slots start at 6:30 p.m. Space is limited. To register for the Read the Animals, visit the Fort Wayne Animal Care and Control website under Youth Programs. Children under 18 must be accompanied by a parent or guardian who stays at the shelter during their reading session. Readers can only register for one session per visit. Siblings or families must register separately. No children under 5 in rooms, please. Children can bring their own books to read or borrow one of ours. Read to the Animals is held at Fort Wayne Animal Care and Control on the adoption side at 3020 Hilligas Road, Fort Wayne. Sponsored by Fido's Forest, which is a 5-acre wooded space fully fenced where you and your dogs can roam unleashed. Located on the north side of Fort Wayne at 4582 West Wallen Road, families can rent the fenced space for just $19 per hour for the first dog and just $5 for each additional dog. Reservations provide exclusive use of the park. Fort Wayne Animal Care and Control's Humane Education Department offers multiple ongoing programs that educate youth about empathy, kindness, and compassion. Programs include Read to the Animals, Animal Care Teens, in-classroom and in-shelter school group visits, spring break, summer and winter camps. For questions about our Humane Education Program, please visit the youth page at fwacc.org. How to become a drain stormer. Protecting our rivers starts with each of us. There's still time for summer family fun to show your river this summer by joining with residents across our community to become a Clean Drains Fort Wayne drain stormer. Clean Drains Fort Wayne is asking everyone, individuals, families, friends, churches, neighbors, and businesses to become part of the drain stormer team to keep our storm drains clean. Fort Wayne has over 20,000 storm drains designed to carry rainwater away from neighborhoods and into our rivers. These drains can transport trash and debris, polluting our waterways and harmful wildlife. As trash and debris accumulate in the storm drains, they also block rainwater from flowing away freely, increasing the risk of street and neighborhood flooding. Be part of the Drain Stormer Brigade. Register at cleandrainsinthefort.org to receive your free drain stormer kit. The kit includes drain markers, chalk for mural fun, gloves, a map with drain locations, bags, and commemorative t-shirts. This activity is fun, easy, and perfect for all ages. Whether you are decorating sidewalks with the chalk art, placing drain markers, cleaning drains, or enjoying a sunny day outside, Drain Stormers makes a difference. Sign up now and become a river hero today at cleandrainsinthefort.org. Engaging Educational Activities at Indiana State Fair by Olivia DeYoung and Devin Raver. The Indiana State Fair kicks off August 1st and highlights the theme of Soundtrack of a Summer, presented by Get Prepared Indiana. Fairgoers can also hear from Purdue University experts about everything from insects to drones to physical and financial wellness, all of which Purdue Extension teaches year-round. Purdue Extension is excited to once again be part of the 2025 Indiana State Fair. It's a wonderful opportunity to celebrate the accomplishments of 4-H youth from across the state and to showcase our programs, said Angie Wabbit, Interim Director of Purdue Extension and Associate Dean of the College of Agriculture. Attendees will have the chance to learn about agriculture, nature, and healthy lifestyles through our interactive demonstrations and activities. We are particularly looking forward to the educational exhibits at the Purdue Extension Building, where attendees can connect with various Purdue University and Extension experts and engage with rotating interactive displays. The Purdue Extension Building, located on the north side of the fairground, will feature activities for all ages, including block party. Children 8 months to 8 years can engage in block play to enhance a variety of school readiness skills. 4-H Next Chapter, explore how students can become beyond ready for their next step after high school. Engage with Purdue Extension Specialists. Interact with experts in fields such as entomology, human health and sciences, forestry and natural resources, and animal sciences. Master Gardener, discover animals, annuals, and vegetable plants suited to Indiana's climate and learn how to properly care for them. Pollinators, learn about pollinators and their essential role in producing fantastic food and fabulous flowers. Here are additional Purdue events available during the fair. Not So Creepy Crawlies, exploring insects with Purdue Entomology and the Children's Museum of Indianapolis from 3 to 7 p.m. August 13th. Fairgoers can explore local and international insects with the Purdue Department of Entomology in the Purdue Extension Building. Attendees will also be able to experience sights and sounds from Purdue's Boiler Bug Barn, which is known for such insects as cockroaches. Anyone can ask questions to Purdue entomologists, and those brave enough can even touch and hold some of the bugs. Popping flavors, Purdue developed popcorn seasonings. Purdue Extension will offer free samples of popcorn every day from 1 to 5 p.m. in the Purdue Extension Building, courtesy of Weaver Popcorn. Attendees can spice up their free popcorn with seasonings developed by Purdue food science students who work with the Food Entrepreneurship and Manufacturing Institute. One flavor, black pepper and golden cheddar, creates a classic cheesy snack, while the other flavor, Elephant Ear Express, suits those looking for a sweet cinnamon sugar treat. Indiana ranks number one in popcorn production in the U.S., and fairgoers can learn more about this Hoosier favorite through a dynamic exhibit in the Purdue Extension Building. The display will educate children and adults about the fascinating science and history of popcorn in Indiana. Pioneer Village, time travel in the 1800s. Between the Machinery Field and the MHS Family Fun Park, Pioneer Village transports fairgoers to the 1800s. Sponsored by the Purdue Ag Alumni Association, the village offers guests the opportunity to enjoy antique tractors, the farm toy show, a fiddler's contest, a liar's contest, the Opry House, and much more. The Indiana State Fair at 1202 East 38th Street, Indianapolis, will run from Friday, August 1st through Sunday, August 17th, but will be closed on Mondays. Purdue Extension exhibits are located throughout the fairgrounds, spanning the 4-H Exhibit Hall, 4-H Centennial Hall, Blue Ribbon Pavilion, Champions Pavilion, Cartiva Coliseum, Expo Hall, Indiana Farm Bureau, Fall Creek Pavilion, Northwest Pavilion, Pathway to Water Quality, Pioneer Village, Pop Weaver Youth Pavilion, and the Purdue Extension Building and West Pavilion. Foxy, a life saved, a legacy shared. A generous donation by Byron and Lynn Braun in memory of Sophia and Charles Braun and Foxy. Foxy wasn't just a dog, he was a pioneer. Rescued and deeply loved by Sophia and Charles Braun, Foxy defied the odds and made medical history. He was rescued in the early 70s, and when his heart began to fail, there were few treatment options available. But the Braun family made a miracle happen. Foxy became the first dog in the world to survive a pacemaker implantation, paving the way for future life-saving procedures and veterinary medicine. Thanks to the skilled veterinary team at Purdue University, Foxy not only survived, he thrived, living a full and happy life for years after surgery. In the photos of the bronze cherish, you'll see a flexible ACE bandage wrapped around his chest. That simple bandage held the pacemaker in place during those critical early days. It became a symbol of his resilience and the extraordinary care that gave him more time, more joy, and more memories with the people who adored him. Foxy's life wasn't just a victory for one family. It was a gift to the world. His journey provided invaluable data to the medical community, helping inform future care for both animals and humans alike. Sophia and Charles Brown's love for Foxy and their belief in second chances echoes the mission of Humane Fort Wayne to serve people and pets through love, compassion, and life-saving innovation. Their son, Byron, and his wife, Lynn, are honored to continue the legacy with their hearts entirely devoted to giving animals a chance at life, health, and happiness. Sophia passed away last December at the remarkable age of 99. Her legacy, like Foxy, lives on through their generous pledge in his honor, a testament to a dog who changed lives and to the people who made his second chance possible. And now your gift can go even further. In honor of Foxy and the enduring legacy of Sophia and Charles Braun, every donation made will be graciously matched by Byron and Lynn Braun. Together, we can continue to save lives, give hope, and carry forward a mission grounded in love. You have an estate plan, whether you know it or not. Think estate planning is only for the wealthy or elderly? Think again. If you own anything, a home, a car, a savings account, even a pet, you already have an estate plan. The only question is, did you create it or will your estate do it for you? When someone passes away without an estate plan, state laws take over, deciding who gets what and when. This legal process may not reflect your wishes. That's why taking control of your assets through a personal estate plan should be a top priority. At its core, estate planning is about clarifying your wishes and making things easier for your heirs. It ensures your assets are distributed according to your preferences, designates who will make decisions on your behalf, and if you can't, and provides guidance for your care in a medical crisis. Most plans include four key components. A will. This document outlines how your assets should be distributed after your death and names an executor to oversee the process in probate court. It can also designate guardians for minor children. Keep in mind that a will doesn't cover everything. Certain transfer on death accounts and jointly held property may bypass your will entirely. Second, there's a power of attorney. If you become incapacitated, you'll want someone you trust to be able to make decisions on your behalf. A durable power of attorney designates such a person, helping to ensure your bills are paid, your business continues, and your wishes are honored. Third, a health care directive. Sometimes called a living will, this document spells out your preferences for medical treatment if you're unable to speak for yourself. It can also designate someone to make health care decisions for you. And finally, beneficiary designations. Accounts like 401ks, IRAs, and life insurance policies transfer directly to the people you name, regardless of what your will says. It's essential to review these beneficiary designations regularly, especially after significant life events such as marriage, divorce, death of a spouse, or the birth of a child. One common myth is that a will is all you need, but wills only take effect after death. They don't help if you're alive but unable to make decisions. Another misconception is that estate planning is only for the wealthy. In truth, planning is about more than money. It's about making things easier for the people you love during difficult times. An estate plan can prevent costly legal battles, reduce confusion, and give your loved ones a clear roadmap to follow. It also allows you to leave a legacy that reflects your values and priorities. As your life changes, your estate plan should change along with it. Review your documents every few years or after a major life event. It's often a good idea to seek help with such reviews. Your financial advisor or attorney can guide you through the process ensuring your plan fits your unique circumstances. In the end, estate planning isn't just about planning for what happens when you are gone. It's about feeling confident knowing that what matters most, your family, your purpose, your legacy is protected. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Doug with Area News. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library.